Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
How does your state compare to others with regards to its legal system? With access to lawyers, availability of non-lawyers to help with legal issues? Well, we're going to take a look at these and a host of other issues. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director of Responsive Law, which is a nonprofit organization, and they have just recently released the report card on barriers to affordable legal help. Tom, I have to tell you, I'm very impressed and very depressed by what you've come up with, because you and I have been talking for a number of years, and I don't see it getting much better in terms of access to the legal system for consumers without paying a host of money.
No, you're right, Shirley. It's a very uphill climb to get some of the smallest changes made to how easy it can be to get your legal situation resolved.
Yeah, and I was telling you before we went on the air, I have a situation that requires filing some court papers in Florida because of a limited guardianship that I have there. And it costs me nearly $700 a year to do this. It's simply a report that I fill out and send to the courts, but I have to do it through a lawyer, and it costs me a hefty sum of money. I always feel like I'm being had when I have to do this. But yet, Florida, I gather, is one of the states that's very restrictive in terms of people helping you do stuff who are non-lawyers.
That's right. Most states have very strict limits on what non-lawyers can do to help you with a legal situation, much more so than you would expect. I've often said it's at the point where if you're a newspaper advice columnist, you could be prosecuted for the unauthorized practice of law. So it's a really tough problem for people who have fairly simple legal issues, yet can't get the help they need without paying a couple hundred dollars an hour for a lawyer.
Oh, yeah. It is very frustrating. Well, let's look at what you covered in your report card, which I sat down and I read it and I said, well, maybe it's gotten a little better. There have been some positive things that have happened. We're going to talk about that later. For example, a Supreme Court decision, which could be positive for consumers. But let's talk about one of the things that's a barrier to affordable legal help. And that is, and I never thought about this, that non-lawyers cannot own a law firm. If you're not a lawyer, you can't own a law firm?
That's right.
That doesn't make sense.
No, it really doesn't make sense. It's pretty archaic. And first of all, if you think about that, you might think, well, why does that even matter? Who cares who owns the law firm? Well, you look at all the other sorts of services that people get in this country. They get tax help. They get help with medical issues. They get help with any number of services out there. And in most cases, they have a national brand that's available to them. That's a large company that uses economies of scale and uses large resources outside of the area of expertise to handle all the business end of things and lets the specialists do what they do in providing a service.
In this case, then, it would mean that your law firms are generally smaller?
Right. Law firms are generally smaller, especially a lot of people know there are big law firms out there
Sure. That
are these, you know, multi-hundred person law firms. However, those are law firms that are handling mostly corporate issues. When you're talking about law firms that handle the average consumer issue, you're looking at a law firm of no more than 10 attorneys, usually just a couple of attorneys at most.
And so consequently, first off, you have the challenge of finding them. Secondly, they have the challenge of making themselves known to the community. And there are a host of other issues that would impact on how accessible they are.
Absolutely. These lawyers are folks who really went to law school with great intentions. They said, I want to serve the average person. They don't want to provide services for free, but they want to provide services affordably. And they said, I want to help people with their day-to-day needs. And then they get into practice and realize they've got to keep the lights on. They've got to pay the bills. They've got to market themselves. They got to do all sorts of things besides what they went to law school to learn to be an expert in, which is practicing law.
So that, of course, is going to drive their prices up, for one thing.
Absolutely. And they're finding themselves in a small practice. It would be much better if they could go work for a large company that said, we will provide legal services to the people. Our company is going to do that, whether it be, you know, Walmart or Costco or Sam's Club, any of these large companies, if they were allowed to own a law firm, could say, we're going to hire all these lawyers that are miserable doing marketing. Let them just practice law.
And
we're going to be able
it.
To do this at a much more affordable price. It could be a third or even a quarter of what people pay now for lawyers.
So right now, one of those companies that you just mentioned could not start a law firm within its own company.
That's correct.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, is this typical? I know when you were doing this report from reading the information. By the way, Tom, tell people where to find this information.
Certainly. You can go to our website, which is responsivelaw.org, and you've got a link right there in the top right that takes you to our report card.
And the reason I like your report card, you talk about the states and you break it down as to what the problems are within each of the states. So that can give us something to think about, we as residents of those states. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But anyway, going back to this non-lawyer ownership. So has there been any, and in other countries, this can happen, right? I mean,
there's
not that kind of barrier. When you compared our legal system, and you know, I'm a big flag waver, you know that. But sometimes I do think we get behind the ball on some things, and it certainly seems like the accessibility of our legal system is not what it is when compared to Europe. Now, I believe you've just returned from a conference where you really had a real close-up look at how other countries function.
That's right. I was at a conference earlier this year, which included folks from law firms and other organizations and regulatory bodies in England and in Australia, where outside ownership of law firms is allowed. And law firms and ability of people to get legal help has thrived there. People can go to the mall and get legal help. People can call up a national hotline and talk to a law firm, which lets people just practice law and lets lawyers practice law, lets other people do all the back end stuff and get a much more affordable legal service than they would in the U.S.
Now, there was at one time a move towards making non-lawyers like paralegals, who I guess you might somehow compare that to the work that a nurse practitioner does, but to make paralegals available. Now, paralegals now can only work for a lawyer. Is that the case?
That's right. The word paralegal generally is taken to mean someone who works for a lawyer. But what's happening now is this is one of those places where there's a slight little sliver of light coming through. Washington State just recently licensed what it calls limited licensed legal technicians. It's basically someone with paralegal training who can assist you with a legal matter, a simpler legal matter. They're right now only licensed to do family law, but they can help you fill out forms. They can instruct you as to what the law is, give you some limited advice. Do a lot of things that traditionally only lawyers have been allowed to do, but which really are fairly simple legal tasks. An untrained person couldn't do it, but someone with a paralegal level of training is capable of doing this.
Well, now, and that's where, I mean, are there states that are doing this now? Is it jurisdictions or what's happening?
Well, Washington State has just licensed its first few legal technicians. There are other states that have been exploring it. California is one of them. New York's taken a slight look at it. No one else has anything really in the works right now, but we are pushing to get other states to adopt this as well, because this could be a really good thing, like you said, like a nurse practitioner, where you don't need the full expertise of a doctor or a surgeon, but you need someone with some training to help you understand a system that you're not familiar with.
Right. Okay. Well, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director of Responsive Law, which is a nonprofit organization that tries to make the legal system more accessible to consumers and consequently not cost us so much if we have a legal issue. So the non-lawyer help issue then is something that has to be, is that done state by state?
Right. All of these issues are legislated state by state. States. The regulation of law practices
is a state
matter.
That's the way it should be. I mean, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. That's not a federal issue, but it is an issue for people who are living in states where they don't have as much access. And some of the states are really kind of behind the times. It was interesting. I saw that Minnesota in one category was in the top, and then in the other category, it was in the bottom five. So I guess it depends on what the area is that you're examining as to whether or not they're rated highly as being consumer friendly or not.
Right. We looked at three main areas. One of them, which was a small part of the grade, is how well a state treats its self-represented litigants. So if you go to court on your own, how well does the court treat you as an unrepresented person? The other two areas, which were the larger part of the grade, were barriers to getting help from a non-lawyer. In other words, what do states prevent non-lawyers from serving you with? And then barriers to lawyer help, which is where the non-lawyer ownership of law firms comes in. It's also looking at areas like, can you practice across state lines? If I'm living in Florida, can I get help from a lawyer in New Jersey?
Well, you know, I can understand how at one time it might have been very difficult for a lawyer in Florida to help somebody in New Jersey or vice versa. But with the internet now and the access to information online, you don't have to have a whole office of law books to know what the laws are in a state.
Right. And the dirty little secret about lawyers you learn sometime along the line in law school, we realize that we're not going to law school to learn the law as it exists in any particular state. We're going to law school to learn how to find the law.
The concept of law.
Right. We learn to analyze someone's situation and find the law. So if I'm a lawyer in Florida, I could handle something in New Jersey. I would just have to look up New Jersey law, maybe talk to some other experts there, but there's resources for that. My skill as a lawyer is in analyzing someone's legal situation, not in memorizing legal books.
And I can see how it would be helpful for someone who has an issue, who lives in one state. They have to go find a lawyer in that state, and they don't have a clue as to who that lawyer might be.
Right.
Suppose you own property in one state, and you've got a property issue, and you live in Virginia, and this is out in the Middle West, Midwest somewhere. You'd have to find a lawyer there.
Right. And these issues get very complicated.
How do you do that?
Right. You could live in Florida and have property in Kansas.
Well, that's not uncommon. Right. I know lots of people who have property in several places.
Right. And you could furthermore need a lawyer, but your lawyer may be licensed in Kansas, but might be sitting in Nebraska doing his legal work. So the question gets really complicated for no good reason. You look at Canada. Canada's got what they call a national mobility compact, where it's very simple for a lawyer to just fill out some papers and say, yes, even though I'm in British Columbia, I can practice in Ontario. And it subjects them to that state's disciplinary system in case there's anything that goes awry, which is what the bar in the U.S. always complains is an issue.
Well, and most of the cases that lawyers deal with, as I understand it, never go to court. They may have documents presented before a judge, but do they mostly end up being resolved without setting foot in a courtroom?
Right. And such a small percentage of legal matters are even litigation related in the first place. A lot of legal matters are transactional, not dealing with disputes. And then even those that deal with disputes very rarely end up in court. So, you know, even though what we see on TV all the time is lawyers as litigators, that's a very small part of what lawyers do. That's drama, not law.
That's right. Exactly. That is drama. That keeps our interest. Law and order. There you go. Okay, so the advantage to this would be that the consumer would have the ability to find a lawyer living in a state that has a lower cost of living. The lawyer could live there, have less rent, etc., offer legal services to people around the country, and do it efficiently and effectively. But the barriers is that would have to be all agreements between states, I would gather.
That's right. It would have to, if we followed Canada's model, it would be individual states entering into that sort of agreement. Now, there are some states that are better about this than others. Colorado allows a fairly liberal admission to practice for people from out of state, and that helped them on the report card. But most states are fairly restrictive. They require you to have a certain number of years of practice. They may require you to pay a hefty fee, and they sometimes won't let you do it at all without sitting for that state's bar exam.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and I hear that, you know, that some of the lawyers who live in various jurisdictions do not want someone from the outside coming in and intruding on their cases.
Right. This is part of the...
It's an economic issue, really.
Right. And really, one of the themes of this report card is that a lot of these barriers, although the bar claims that they're there to protect consumers, are really there to protect lawyers from competition, whether it's competition from outside the profession or competition internally from people with new business models or from other states.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me, and I suspect that a lot of people don't really get the legal help that they need because they can't afford it. I know at Call for Action, people will call us because they say they can't afford to go to a lawyer. Now, fortunately, we're able to help them a lot, but we're not practicing law. We're not lawyers. We're only, you know, contacting businesses and saying, you know, what's the problem? Can we help resolve it? So, but yet sometimes cases have to go. You know, you have a case of somebody who's been ripped off the tune of $50,000. They're going to need some kind of legal help.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And even what Call for Action does, depending on some states, would be considered the unauthorized practice of law. And it wouldn't make a very glamorous case or a very press-friendly case for a prosecutor to go after, but it's also not done by a prosecutor. The Bar Association doesn't really care what the public thinks in many cases, and they might be just as happy to go after Call for Action. Right. They would claim that because Call for Action does not have lawyers giving this advice, that the advice being given is inferior to what a lawyer would provide.
But it's not, how do they describe that? How would you, you know, that would get into the people who are counselors. Mm-hmm. That would be advice. How mm-hmm. do you get, you know, that's a tricky, that would be a sliding slope, I would think.
It's a very tricky issue. And one of the things we looked at when we were analyzing these laws is how vague were they? There were a lot of states which had very vague laws covering what is and is not allowed. And that's almost as bad as having a very restrictive law.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very slippery slope, and it's one that's very ill-defined because lawyers can't really define it. They put it on an I know it when I see it
right.
standard, but not everybody knows it when they see it.
Right.
Most people would think that what call for action does is a great public service, not some harm to consumers as the unauthorized practice of
law.
Yeah,
well, believe me, we are very careful to tell people that we're not lawyers and that we're not advice and telling them legal procedures to take. So anyway, I hope nobody out there gets the idea of coming after us. That would be not good.
Yes. Well, you let us know if that happens, and
all right.
we'll talk.
Oh,
to some
we'll
people.
Let the whole world know.
Yep.
Believe me, we have the ability to do that. Okay. I doubt seriously. We've worked with the bar associations and had them in our offices and doing all kinds of things. So I would hope not. But I do understand the need for lawyers to protect their turf in a sense. I mean, I do. I mean, that makes sense. That's their livelihood. That's what they've studied all these years for. But on the other token hand, I think there are ways that we can make the system more accessible. So let's just mm-hmm. take a brief pause here on that happy note and let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director of Responsive Law. It's an organization devoted to making the legal system more accessible to consumers. And they've just put out a report card on looking at how the states are doing in terms of knocking down barriers for consumers to getting the help that they need. And interesting things going on. Now, there was in some of your information I talked about, there was a recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that actually had to do with dentists. But how does that apply to the lawyers?
Right. There was a U.S. Supreme Court case that was decided in February. It's North Carolina State Board of Dental Examiners versus Federal Trade Commission, if anybody wants to look it up. And the case said that a group of dentists that was regulating who could practice dentistry was not immune from antitrust lawsuits when they said that people couldn't perform teeth whitening who weren't dentists. So you could go, people would often go to a hygienist and get their teeth whitened. It would cost a lot less than going to a dentist. And the dentists who were in charge of regulating dentistry said, no, that's dentistry. You can't do it. This case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, because the dentists, Board of Dentists was not did not have sufficient oversight from the rest of the government, that they were in fact potentially violating antitrust laws.
Oh, that's an interesting turn.
Right.
And so that is applied, that should be applied to the bars, the bar associations?
Absolutely. And we filed a brief in the Supreme Court case saying, hey, by the way, this applies to lawyers too and should be especially important because so few people have access to the legal system, and this is one of the reasons why.
Well, has it made changes? Has anything changed?
It's starting to. States are slowly starting to come around in terms of seeing that this is something that has to happen. In fact, in North Carolina, the North Carolina bar had been going after LegalZoom, the online document preparer,
yes.
For some time now. After this decision, LegalZoom sued them under an antitrust violation saying, hey, North Carolina bar, you can't tell us we can't practice here. We can't provide our services here because that's a violation of the Supreme Court case. And it's settled on terms that are very favorable to people who want to use services from folks like LegalZoom.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something that LegalZoom would have to do state by state, or?
Right. It would have to be state by state. What we'd like to see happen is that states get properly supervised. So right now, one of the things that would be great is if states move the power to prosecute UPL cases and enforce UPL's unauthorized practice of law.
Mm-hmm.
If states move the power to enforce unauthorized practice of law restrictions from the bars, who have a great self-interest in mm-hmm. protecting their turf, to an attorney general. And many states already have that, but
Maryland
more states should
does,
move there.
Doesn't
right.
it? Yes.
Right. So,
and that means oftentimes, too, the attorney general is not going to take action against the person that's doing what the bar association might not like.
Right. There are problems with the statutes on their face, But there are also problems with the enforcement level of the statutes. And those were the two parts we looked at in our barriers to non-lawyer help is what's the statute say you can do, but also who's in charge of prosecuting this? Is it the bar, who's very self-interested and is going to take a very wide view of who who's providing services illegally? Or is it an attorney general who really has the public interest at
I've read about lawsuits being brought against paralegals and other people. So, that's a tough area. It really is a tough area. What do you see happening? What do you put your crystal ball out there? And
well, we've seen states already starting to take a more cautious approach to having their state bars bring legal action in these cases. And I think it is going to start to shift over the next year or so as states realize that they're subject to the dental examiner's decision and that they have to have their bars be properly supervised. It could take one of two forms. It could be more oversight from a state Supreme Court, which is better than letting the bar go on their own. But even better is to have them go with an attorney general, either exercising oversight or just purely taking over prosecution of unauthorized
practice. Because what you're really
cases.
Talking about is that the it would be a case of someone being, the bar association would look at them as breaking the law. In other words, practicing law without a license.
Right. Interesting. What we'd like to see really in terms of these statutes is a no harm, no foul policy.
Exactly.
Where if a consumer doesn't allege any harm or if the state can't show that there's any actual harm to a consumer, that there's no case. This should be a defense against any sort of unauthorized practice charges.
Yeah. We're not for more lawsuits. Right.
Right. No.
Right. Indeed not. Okay. So the report card is available at responsivelaw.org, right?
That's right.
And you've got a lot of other stuff on there too, Tom. What are some of the things that are on your website that would be of interest to consumers?
Sure. We've got links to a lot of things we've written about these problems in the legal system. We just this past week had an op-ed in USA Today about our report card and some of the topics it covers. We've got other items on there that we've written about
the system. Have you done a guide to small claims courts or anything
We have links to some legal resources as well on our website. So for certain things, if you need help finding legal forms, we have those available through a provider on our website.
Okay.
And we're hoping in the near future to expand that as well so that we'll have more services offered through the website in the coming year.
Okay. And you are a nonprofit organization, and I know that you've been around for a while and you've worked very hard on this issue, which is obviously quite dear to your heart. Well, let's look positively so that we want no one to be harmed, neither lawyers or consumers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's your goal. You're
Absolutely.
A lawyer, right?
Yes. And you mentioned earlier, Shirley.
And my husband's a lawyer.
Right. And I come from a family of lawyers, so I certainly don't want to see anybody go out of business.
You don't want to be ignored at Thanksgiving dinner,
right? No, not at all. And you mentioned earlier that, about lawyers protecting their turf and lawyers having a valid interest in maintaining a living. We certainly don't want to take that away from lawyers.
Right.
The fact is that lawyers provide a valuable service that non-lawyers can't provide in certain cases. There's skills that lawyers bring that non-lawyers can't bring for more complicated cases, for specialization areas that a non-lawyer wouldn't have the resources to do. When a lawyer is bringing that particular skill to the table, they're not going to have to worry about losing any income because of non-lawyers. What non-lawyers are going to largely do are the simpler things. They're going to do the more rote work, the things that don't require advanced training to do.
And probably would never get to a lawyer simply because of the cost.
Right, right. Lawyers are going to not lose people who can't afford them in the first place.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's just like me, like I mentioned at the beginning, these papers that I have to file. I mean, it's amazing to me that I have to go through a lawyer and pay so much money to do the same thing every year. And it really irritates me, I have to tell you. Thank you, Tom. Thank you so much for being with us. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Tom Gordon, who's Executive Director of Responsive Law. Their website is responsivelaw.org. They've got wonderful information there. And do go look at the report card. It will open your eyes. And it really does provide some great insight into some of the gaps in our legal system and what we need to make it more accessible. But anyway, Tom, thank you so much. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM Federal News Radio. And I'm Shirley Rooker. You can reach me at shirley@callforaction.org. That's shirley@callforaction.org. Thank you for joining us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.